What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. Today, I'm going to talk with a CEO of a very innovative company, but maybe not innovative in the way you are typically thinking of when you hear that word. But you know how some buildings, some spaces, outdoor or indoor, some places just have these really magical qualities? They kind of just suck you in and you feel different there, right? You feel like you belong. You feel like the environment is really just more collaborative and full of energy. And it's because of the art in the space. And a lot of people don't realize that, but having art indoors, outdoors, in our spaces can make us feel differently. And it's really so much more important than just, oh, we got to cover the walls with something. It's really about bringing people in, engaging them, making them think differently, more collaboratively, and getting new ideas. So this is what the CEO of this company, IndieWalls, that I'm interviewing today, is going to talk to us about: how they built this innovative company, how they make art work in the world, and how they started this company. So welcome to the show, Gavi.
Thanks, Alice. I'm excited to be here.
All right. Well, let's just take a minute, because I probably didn't perfectly explain what IndieWalls does, but why don't you tell everyone what IndieWalls does, who they do it for, and what the kind of results that brings us?
Totally. So IndieWalls is traditionally called a commercial art consultancy. So that really means that we help all different types of commercial buyers purchase the artwork for their spaces. And we really like to think of ourselves as kind of the nexus of a triumvirate. There's artists, the creatives, there's businesses, and then there's a physical thing coming out of that. And that could be lots of different things. It could be an original piece of work. I'm showing some behind me. A printed piece of work that is framed. It could be a large hanging sculptural installation. And we do that for all different types of clients. We do that for LinkedIn, for Amazon, for Hilton Hotels, for Virgin Voyages, all different types of artwork. But if there's an artist involved and a business involved and something physical is coming out of it, we want to be there to help.
Now, I have been lucky enough to see some of your projects in person, but of course, everyone should follow IndieWalls because they're always posting the most amazing projects that they've done. You have literally transformed environments. And I just want to stay on this for a minute and talk about how you did that, right? And a lot of these are built from scratch, so maybe easier in that respect, but there's many that you absolutely reform, right? And reshape and bring into this amazing, you know, space that they end up having. And so I just want to have you tell everybody a little bit about that, because it truly is it's such an interesting process.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times we say this often, that it could be with a new property or a renovated property, that you bring on an architect and an interior designer and you spend a tremendous amount of money getting them involved and helping them come up with a narrative. And there's a sense of place. Maybe, you know, you're taking over an old paper mill and reconstructing it and making it into a hotel. And so there's all this historical information, or maybe it's in a very, you know, we did a hotel a little while ago. It was on the corner of 24th Street and 7th. And so the theme was 24/7, being up 24/7 in New York City. So you come up with this whole theme and concept, and you try and pull that through in the design of the space, but it's sometimes hard to really get that through the carpets or the wall vinyls or the lighting. But then you pull artwork into it, and the artwork tells the story in a very literal way. So in the 24/7 property, they had all different nods in terms of clocks and calendars. They also got a little bit cheeky and put in a lot of pills, the idea of kind of staying up all night and what you would have to do that in New York City, and kind of how you tell that story through the artwork. And it's really bringing in these creatives who have concepts and ideas and and pulling that through the whole narrative that you've already put so much effort, energy into through the artwork.
Yeah. And you walk in to that world and feel that world, right? Versus totally. Just walking into a lobby. It's like, oh, this is called 24/7, but then there's nothing else that really intrigues me here. Instead, you walk into the world of 24/7 and you're totally. Instantly engaged in it, right? Totally. And you feel like a part of it. And that's just such a different feeling. And I know what you did on campuses like LinkedIn and Amazon too, is made spaces where people want to, they want to be in those spaces. They want to hang out. They want to mingle. They want to meet people there. Oh, hey, meet me in the lobby with a big, beautiful tapestry. I'll see you there, you know, and they refer to the art that way. And I think sometimes we overlook the power of art.
Yes.
You know, to really bring people together and make them have, you know, a feeling of belonging, right, in that space.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I would say Amazon's a great example. We actually did the artwork for, they took over the old Lord & Taylor building in New York City. So it was an old, textile type of property. And we created what's called the birdcage. And it's this space where people can sit and congregate. And it's wrapped in these incredible hand-woven giant ropes. They're like fishing type rope or boating type rope, I should say. And the rope is meant to be a nod to both it being the Lord & Taylor building, but it's also supposed to look like Ethernet cable. And so that combination of tech and textiles and bringing those two stories together, and there's often, people might think, well, not everybody knows that story. It's written up in different places, but Walt Disney used to say, people can feel perfection. And so even if they don't see it exactly all the time, the fact that it surrounds them, like you were saying, they enter into a space and it's all about that. It's all about that story. It just feels more engaging. It's why people like being in really beautiful places, even without knowing exactly why it is.
Yeah. All right. One more story before I take you back to the beginning when you founded this company. But your company worked on a project in my town, which was amazing, our renowned hospital.
Yes.
And I got to have a complete tour of that, where, you know, just amazing installation, right? So thinking about, especially the children's unit, how to weave the art into everything. So it was not just on the walls, but in the walls and really? In spaces, and made in a way that would just bring joy in a place where there isn't a lot of joy sometimes, right?
Yes.
Finding these little spaces with these different art, you know, forms there for the kids and the parents and the nurses, right? For everyone to enjoy. That was a real treat. So I might have to put those pictures up again now that I'm saying that, so I can share, but that was really fun to have a project right in my own backyard that I got to go see while I was working with your company. That was really fun. All right. So Gavi, let's talk about, okay, two crazy guys have this idea to do an art company. Like, are you an artist? How did this start?
Yeah. So I would say I'm more of an entrepreneur than an artist. I did have a dark room in my basement when I was a kid. And I liked the sort of the maker part, the sort of chemistry part of artwork. So that was part of where my head was at. But in reality, the way that the company started, it was different. I saw artwork in a cafe on campus and I really liked it. This woman, actually Alice as well, her name was Alice Mulbeck, that was the artist. And the artwork was really beautiful. I could not buy the artwork though, because she wanted me to give her cash. I don't think I could take out enough money out of an ATM at that point. She didn't take credit card. I was like, I don't have a checkbook, so I couldn't buy it. And I thought, oh, it'd be cool if we could bring all of this online and kind of become a network for artists and coffee shops and cafes to come together and put the artwork up for sale and have it all be online and people could snap a QR code and buy the artwork out of those spaces. So that was the original idea. And I called up my friend Ari, who's great at selling and getting in front of people. And I was like, how about we build out this company together? I'll build out the operations. You'll do the selling, get the cafes, get the artists, move that forward. And he said, great. He was kind of down for anything. So we started building that out. I think we got into like 30
properties. You were still in college now, right?
Still in college. Yeah. Yes, he had graduated from undergrad, was doing his master's. So So he's a little more flexible with time. I graduated a little early, actually, from college. So I graduated a semester early, but stayed on campus and started it just during that process. And we started rolling with that. And we were off and on again at the beginning. I wasn't so sure if it's what I wanted to do, but then things started to move a little bit better. I thought they did at the time. They didn't. Really, artwork does not sell out of hotels at all, out of coffee shops at all. It's not a good business. Don't do it. But we started to realize there was more of an opportunity in commercial spaces and in hotels. They started coming to us. And that was really where we realized the money and opportunity was.
Okay, interesting. So you said they started coming to us, because I always want to know, where did you get your first clients? How did that work, right? And, yes, you know, founder-led sales, the two of you were the ones doing everything, right?
Yes.
So how did they find you? How did they come to you, your first customers?
Yeah. So, okay. So the first customers, when we were in the cafe and putting work up, we had a couple of crazy people who bought artwork off of the walls without like speaking to anybody. We had one $5,000 artwork that somebody snapped QR code, put a credit card in and purchased, and we drove it to our house in a minivan. That never happened except for that one time. But we did the Andaz on Fifth Avenue, actually, in New York. Ari, my business partner, would go around, was trying to speak to everybody, and he was like, can I put artwork up for sale in your public space? And do you want to rent it? Do you want to sell it? They were like, we don't want to do either of those things, but we have $30,000 for the suites in our hotel for photography there. Can you figure that out? And we said, whatever you want us to do for $30,000, we will do. So that was kind of how that began, that realization that, oh, there was this opportunity. And that was kind of the first real customer who was willing to pay us for the artwork, a decent amount of money. And so then we started realizing, okay, hotels need artwork.
So it was an actual hotel, and he literally just walked in there and said, can I put some art on your walls? And they're like, no, but we need some art in our rooms.
Yes. Well, one of the greatest stories, I would say, he was very good at that type of thing. And he went to, at the time, it was called the Trump Soho. They have changed the name at this point. But the Trump Soho, Ari biked over there. He would bike around town just looking for places to put up artwork. He lived in Manhattan. And so he was biking around, and he knew the general, he had tried to get in touch with the general manager of the Trump Soho, and they would not, he wouldn't respond to him. So he biked over, locked his bike up, like in the elevator, in the land, whatever, some spot near the hotel, went in, said, can I speak to the general manager? They said, no. Okay. He walked out, and some guy came over to him and was like, you can't lock your bike here. Now, if that had been me at the time, I would have been so freaked out. I would have been like, I'm so sorry. I locked the bike in a client. They're annoyed. But he recognized the person as the general manager who was yelling at him not to put the bike there. And he's like, are you the general manager here? And he's like, yeah. And we actually got artwork into the Trump Soho from that interaction. So just really always trying to figure out a way to get in and kind of engage with people.
Oh my gosh, I love it. All right, so those first ones, somebody just happened to buy a piece of art off the wall. Okay. Never happened again. And then Ari just went around talking to people and figuring out what they needed. Cause I mean, so entrepreneurial, like, we want to put art in your, oh, you don't want that? Okay. Well, we'll do this and figure out what people need. I love it. All right. So then, you know, the business grew. You know, how did you get a consistent flow of leads, and, you know, who was buying from you?
Yeah. So I would say at the beginning, we tried to bring on other salespeople, but really it was primarily just a founder-led sales situation, which was great in the sense that Ari was very good at selling, was harder in the sense that really he was the only person who could sell. He kind of ran the sales team, which was somewhat of a struggle. So we really focused on that. He built it up though at the beginning, really like networking. I would say I didn't fully comprehend this at the beginning until I started taking over, but trade shows were just a tremendous driver of pipeline for us. Go to trade show, meet some people, talk to them, build further relationships year after year, and did a lot more of that. And at the beginning, it was just hotels, trying to get to the guest rooms, the public spaces. There's a huge network of designers who design hotels and hotel owners and the brands. They're all franchises. So you're connecting with the brand managers, and they're feeding you to different properties. And so at the beginning, it was really just building up that pipeline and that network. And it was, you know, kind of a classic, the founder is the person who sells. And that's kind of how it happens at the beginning.
Yeah. And remind me, what year did you guys start the company?
So we started in 2011, and it was really building up from there. It took a while to kind of figure out that we needed to, I mean, it took probably 2 years before we even realized we were not doing this, selling artwork out of cafes, and we were not renting artwork. We were actually selling it to the properties. And then it took, you know, several more years before we really had a good client base, through these sort of sales channels.
Yeah. So where was the point where you were like, okay, look, the two of us cannot do everything anymore. We're going to have to start to hire some people. And I'm sure you wanted to hire salespeople. So kind of talk about how you started building your team and especially the sales team.
Yeah. So actually for a while, I thought we were going to build we were a tech platform at first, and we had this matching method kind of algorithm, kind of like Spotify for artwork. And you do the open calls, and there was a whole methodology to it. And I thought that would really get customers. We actually had an investor who was like, just hire a sales team. And I was like, no, we don't need a sales team. Like, if it's a great product, people will just use it and they'll keep coming back to it. I was definitely wrong. We needed a really good sales team. But still, we were doing a good enough job that we were able to get more and more customers. Really, the thing that transitioned us was kind of we were forced in that my co-founder, Ari, decided to move abroad. And when he decided to move abroad, I realized, okay, we need to reconfigure this whole thing. I was like, you can't do sales from abroad. We need to figure out how we're going to run this thing. And I knew I could do a bunch of the selling. I was comfortable doing selling and figuring it out. But the thing about him, he was incredibly good at selling. He didn't exactly know how to build out a sales organization. And I think I was not nearly as good at selling, but understood much more deeply what it meant to build out the people to build a sales organization. So I think that that was a very painful learning lesson, but also a blessing in disguise, in that it forced me to say, okay, I need to go find more salespeople that we trust. And listen, we hired a bunch of people, and I had to let a bunch of, over time, you know, different people were like, okay, this is not working, this is working. And finally, we figured out, okay, what type of people really do well selling this type of product, and how do they do it well? And that was sort of the evolution over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a point too, not too long ago, where Ari couldn't really run sales from afar. He couldn't do sales from afar, but he also couldn't even run sales from afar. And all of a sudden, this is where I came into the picture and met you. It's like, oh, I have to be the sales leader now. Yes. And of course, you hadn't been. You've been doing sales with Ari, right, in conjunction, but not leading a sales team and certainly not completely in charge of sales. Oh my gosh, now I'm the one who has to drive revenue for this company, right? So
yes.
Tell us, that was what, like a couple of years ago? How long ago was that now? Maybe three?
Yeah, I think that was about 3 years ago. And yeah, and I got in touch with you, Alice, during that transitional moment. And you were really instrumental in kind of helping me along in that process, in that transitional moment. Of me really just trying to figure out, one, yes, what does it mean to personally sell, to be out there? And then two, what does it mean to coach a sales team and to build a sales organization? And even for the sales team, they were trying to figure out, okay, there's this person who wasn't selling, who's now my new manager, and we're trying to figure this thing out. And I think at first they were nervous about it, but then over time, between myself, between coaches like yourself, I have a professional coach as well who I work with, I really figured out what this meant and how to do it well. And yeah, that was about three years ago. And it's, you know, I would say we hit a peak right towards the end of Ari's tenure at the company. And then when he left, things slowed down quite tremendously. And now we're back up to beyond where we were back then.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, you guys have done such a good job, and watching you become a sales leader was awesome, but also you realizing, hey, I'm a CEO now too, and I have another job to do. I need a sales leader, and talking through that with you and, you know, the thinking around it, and you found somebody really fantastic. So let's talk about, because a lot of people struggle to find good sales leaders, right? That's just a problem for every CEO from the beginning when they're first trying to, you know, get their very first sales leader to 20 years later. It's tough. So let's talk about how you found, first of all, you said, okay, I'm ready. We need to hire a sales leader. Totally. What was that like? And then how you found this person?
Yeah. So I definitely realized I couldn't be the one leading the sales team and managing the company. My job is really find good people, figure out where we're going, and spend the most time with the most important customers. Those are my three things that I focus on. Managing a sales team is very distracting. They're amazing and have lots of personalities. So it's a lot of time and energy. So I knew I needed somebody in the role, but I also knew from early on that somebody who's incredible at sales is not the best sales leader, because I knew that from Ari. He was probably the most gifted salesperson I ever worked with, but struggled with leading the sales team. And so I knew the best salespeople on our team should not be the sales leaders. And it actually happened to be that our HR manager, we hired somebody new. She understood our industry very deeply. She worked in it for a long time, incredibly capable and smart. And she came in a different role. But our HR manager was like, you know, I think that Natalie might be your director of sales. And I was like, oh, interesting. So she went along for a little while. Maybe she was with us for like a year. And I realized this person really knew that the most important thing was she understood our customers incredibly deeply and knew what our customers really needed and knew how to interact with them. And she had enough charisma and confidence to be able to move a sales team in the right direction, but she could listen to a conversation and say, this is how you should have handled this differently. This is how you should be speaking about it. This is how you should engage with the customer. Good at creating territory plans, good at creating structure. So that was really what we needed.
She was very process oriented because of the type of work she was already doing, right?
Yes.
And truly, sales leadership is project management. I mean, you are managing these people to get these projects done, which are called sales, you know?
Yes, yes, totally, 100%. And, you know, it's funny, you actually introduced us to territory planning, which we still use today. The team does their territory plan every quarter. It's great. We use a very similar structure to what you set us up with. And yeah, it is really holding people accountable, having a really good intuition of what they need, and knowing what's going to work and pushing them, constantly pushing them towards what they need to focus on, what they don't. Because salespeople are a little bit like entrepreneurs. They're like myself, always looking at this shiny thing and that shiny thing and excited about the next thing. They're all over the place. So you need somebody who's very clear-minded to focus them all the time.
No, that is so true. And especially I think in your industry, because it is a shiny object industry, there's so many cool things all the time, right? And so many great artists you can talk to, and you could do a this and you could do a that, right?
Totally.
So I completely get it. And your salespeople they're highly creative because of the industry, not like so much in tech. We're not, you know, don't have that high creativity as much running as your salespeople do. And I think it's, you know, fascinating because I guess it's like a salesperson who also has to have some engineering knowledge, right?
Yes.
Your salespeople absolutely have to love art, you know, understand art and understand the bigger picture of art and what art does to an environment to really be able to sell. And also, interestingly, people might not know this, but it's an extremely complex sale, what you do, because as you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of people involved in this. There's artists, there's the people who own the buildings, right? There's people who manage the buildings, whether they're commercial buildings or hospitality, right? Then there's owners and property managers and the artists and the designers,
yes,
right? And
brands.
As a salesperson, you have to have relationships with all of these people and you have to orchestrate them all coming together to make a decision. And the brands, right? So if you're a Marriott brand, for example, you know, the brand's not going to dictate exactly what you have to do, but they're giving you guidelines you better follow or you won't be part of their brand anymore. So just so many elements there, making it complex. And it's really fun to watch, but some of these deals can take a really long time.
Yes. Yes. The deals can take a very long time. It is very complex. We actually, for a little while, had tried out independent reps. So for people that don't know, an independent rep is somebody who is not employed by us. They just rep multiple different things. They'll rep a carpet line and a furniture line and a tile line, and they'll rep a art line as well. And so they're not fully committed to you, but you don't have to pay them a salary. You just pay them commission, which seems amazing in theory. It really does not work, particularly because of how complex of a sale it was. And like you said, I've realized that the people that we hire need to have a really deep understanding of who we are, what we do, how to do it well, they also need to be passionate about the arts. One of the salespeople on our team was previously a curator on our team, and I could just tell she had a lot of charisma. People really engaged with her well, and she's been an incredible salesperson. She knows
so much passion around the art, but around the selling too, right? It's like she's really delivering something these people need, and I love that.
Yes.
You know, one of the other things that your team does, and because it is a complex, long sales cycle, right? This relationship building is so important because you got to stay with these people for a long time until their next project, right? And especially with the designers, right? You got to stay with those designers and get to know them and be there when they need you, right? And so because of that, your lead generation is super interesting. And what I love about your lead generation is that it's so creative, and I'm constantly telling my clients, be more creative in your lead generation. Cold outreach is just not very creative, and it's not doing the trick. So like, why do it anymore? There's so many other things, but I want you to share some of the, you know, some of the things you do for lead generation. You mentioned trade shows, and of course your trade shows are a lot more fun because they're art and fun stuff, right? But some of the really creative things you've done to really stay in front of the right people so that when they're ready to buy, they remember you.
Yes. Okay. I'll speak about two recent ones that are two of my favorites. So again, the people that we are engaging with are highly creative, and there are like frontier designers, they're constantly coming after them. My wife is in tech, and she works in marketing and in sales. They have people that they're selling to do not have super high expectations from a creative standpoint. For us, people are like, you can't take me out to any restaurant except for these five new restaurants that are recently designed and very cool. So we have to be very creative. One thing that I did that was fun is we have most of our clients are in New York City in the tri-state area. We have clients all over the country, but more than in New York City. I live in New Jersey. So I was like, the clients that I know that live in New Jersey, we're going to do a hangout in my backyard. So I hired a private chef. It was a barbecue. I told them to bring their family members and their kids, just five of our clients, but they brought their families. And they all came. My family was there. There was incredible food because, again, it was a private chef. He did everything and choreographed the music, like had figured out exactly what everything was going to be, brought in plants, really made it like an elevated sort of restaurant level experience, but at home with people's families. And I think that people loved it. They loved it personally. They loved it on social media. It was just a very warm way to bring people in and really creating that hospitality that they look to design. I'm trying to reflect back to them. I know what great hospitality and great design is, and that's why I can do a really good job on your project. I know that level. And
yes, because you're showing them that you really know them.
Yes.
The hospitality business. I'm not going to tell you about it. I'm just going to show you with my actions that I understand hospitality. I love that. And I saw those pictures when you posted them. I was so jealous.
Yes. My other favorite one. So there's a big trade show that happens in New York, and it's hard for us to do a booth because we don't have a product per se that we're selling. We sell the ability to find the right artist. So we don't love to put up artwork at the trade show. Instead, we host an event just before the trade show. The trade show starts in the afternoon on a Sunday. So we host a breakfast in the morning, and we actually follow up with people in advance, the customers we want. So we'll do it like 60 people. And we ask them for their shoe size and a design for a shoe that they'd really like. And then we do something called art and soul. And so they come to the breakfast in advance. They get to eat, drink a little bit. And we set up all these racks, these in beautiful canvas bags. We put their shoes, and there's kind of an unveiling, and they put the shoes in the location, and then they walk to the show with their new shoes on that are made by a custom artist. And it's really such a fun, engaging experience. And they walk the whole show with these custom designed Nike Air Force Ones. And everybody's like, oh, where'd you get those shoes? And they're like, oh, I got them with IndieWalls. And so it markets to them individually. They feel special. It's amazing at the show because they're talking about it. And it speaks really to that creativity. And we do numerous different things while we're there as well to kind of enhance that idea of creativity and thinking creatively.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to come to a breakfast with food and beverage and creative sneakers?
Right? Yes, exactly. That are custom made for you in advance. The artist who did them is there painting shoes on site. It's just a very, again, a very, very creative experience. not my idea, team members' ideas.
Before. And I'm sure if they went the year before, they want to come again, right? And yes. And that's exactly what you want. These people can and will buy from you.
Yes, exactly.
And they're experiencing this with you, which I think just really makes the bond stronger because they're like, oh, these people believe what we believe. They're fun. They're interested. They know what we want. And they engage us. We want to do business with them. And if they're like this before we do business with them, they'll probably be like this while we're doing business with them. And I think that's just so important.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, so much fun. So here you are now, CEO, and you have a head of sales. And how many salespeople do you have now?
We have four, looking for a fifth, but four right now. Four plus for sales.
Okay, very good. And sales are up again, you said, back to? Yeah, that's just wonderful. Love to hear that. Well, gosh, before we wrap up, just want to ask you a couple of more questions, but I so appreciate your time and sharing your stories. And I think it's maybe people think, well, it's easy to be creative when you're in a creative business like art, but I think everyone can be creative, but you do have to stretch yourself a little and think about it. But all of you out there who want more creative ideas, just follow Gavi because he posts this stuff all the time, plus the beautiful artwork that they install in these, you know, commercial facilities as well as in the hotels. So very good. All right. So three questions, Gavi, really quick. And the first one is, what's a book that you think every CEO should read?
So one of my favorite books is Unreasonable Hospitality by Will Gadara. And I love it. One of our core values is make it magical. We came up with that after reading the book. And it speaks to the same idea, the idea of going totally above and beyond for people. And people so appreciate it. If you remember something about them, somebody has a kid, we don't just send them a gift, but we send them something that's very art related. You know, a custom book, child's book from an artist that we know. And just trying to be really, really thoughtful all the time about who people are and what they do. And that's really what the book of Unreasonable Hospitality is all about.
You know what? I got to see Will Gadara in September. In DC. I was at a conference with Pavilion and he spoke and I was just like mesmerized by him. He's a very good speaker as well. And the book is fantastic. So I do recommend everyone to read it. But it's so funny because one of my very best friends in the whole wide world, one of her good friends is best friends with Will Gadara. Oh, and I knew she knew him and I'm texting her because she's a James Beard award-winning chef. I'm like, I'm watching Will Gadara. She's like, oh my gosh, tell him I said hi. And I'm with other friend and tell, you know, and get a picture and send it to us. And so it was so fun because when I walked up to him afterwards, I was like, oh, you know, my friends, Jennifer Bushman and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh my gosh. And it was like big hug. It was like, we already knew each other, right?
Yes.
That was super fun. But anyway, a little side story there. All right.
No, special.
Yeah, very special. Next one is, what's a podcast you listen to because it makes you think differently?
Yeah. Been one of my favorite podcasts forever, basically. I think it was what got me into podcasts. Listening to podcasts was Freakonomics, Stephen Dubner. And I actually just got to see him in person this past week. And I actually got to be on, they have like a sister podcast called Economics of Everyday Things. And I got to be on that. They did one on art and hotels.
Yeah.
But just a podcast that I think is very, that's the whole book of Freakonomics, just trying to think about things from a different perspective and a different angle. And things are not often what they seem. And I think that's often true. Things are not what they seem.
Yeah, I do love that one as well. All right. And last one is, what does every CEO need to know to win in this market?
I think for a long time, we tried to either not pay sales commissions or try to find really kind of newbie salespeople. And what we realized over time was, what you really want is you want your sales team to see that they can make money, and you want to be able to hire a sales team that is hungry for that and sees the path for that. So I even have a friend and I'm always like, you need to hire a sales team that has a commission structure, and that commission structure can make them a lot of money if they do an incredibly good job. And once people start to see that, once a sales team sees that and they can see, oh, this other person on your team is making X amount, I could make that much, that's what gets the absolute best people. And that's really a flywheel. And so I think that was something that took me a long time to realize. And maybe it's obvious to most other people, but to me, that is critical. Finding amazing people because they know that they can be really successful in working with you.
I think that is so true. Setting them up for success. And that does require you to have a compensation plan that they can easily understand and, and make money, right? Doing it. But I think it's also what you were saying is like, get seasoned people who know what they're doing and come to you because they see you've set them up for success and they'll be able to make a good living, right?
Because
love young people and, you know, maybe they can learn on some other different sales, but we have to think about our customer and who they are and who they want to interface with. And they need somebody who has the passion and the drive and the knowledge, right? To help them, not somebody who's just there to sell them something.
Totally. And listen, not to say that we never hire people who are new at selling. We've definitely done that before. And there have been successes there. But you just have to have something that even new people, if they're really good, they want to know that they can win.
That's right.
You have to set them up for success in that regard.
Absolutely. Well, gosh, thank you so much. So fun to talk with you. Always so fun to follow you and see what your company's doing. The amazing art that you have placed all over the country. I just love it when I go to a hotel that I know that Indie Walls did the, you know, the art and the installation and everything. And it's like, oh, I like to take a picture and, you know, send it because it's really fun to know that you did that. And so many beautiful hotels that you've done around the country. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Alice. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the podcast. It's a blast. You're amazing. I've always appreciated working with you and I appreciate being here.
Thank you. If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.